This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Give everybody a seat.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. Today's show is about celebrating diversity. We'll discuss how families maintain their cultural identity as they adapt to a different lifestyle and environment when they come to the United States. And we'll talk about what children need when they immigrate here and how communities and schools are doing when it comes to embracing diversity. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, child care providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. You know, I was at a park a few weeks ago with my grandson, Maceo, and we were sitting next to a woman and her baby who looked Asian. Another mother and her daughter came over to them and asked if they spoke Japanese. They had just come from Japan, and the little girl was wanting to talk to someone in her own language. The mother with the baby apologized for not speaking Japanese and explained that her family was born in the U.S. and only spoke English. The little girl looked disappointed, and her mother said it was because she was excited when she thought there was another Japanese child at the park. Children love to see other people who look and sound like them. There are many challenges families face when they're acclimating to a country's society and culture. In spite of the ethnic and racial diversity in the United States, children continue to encounter many cultural obstacles as they adapt. Their worldview changes as they interact with new people and have different experiences. Some teenagers reject their parents' traditions and look to be more American. We'll address some of the challenges for families of different cultures, whether they're born here or immigrate, and also celebrate the cultural differences in our neighborhoods and classrooms. And September is Latino Heritage Month, with many celebrations going on throughout the Bay Area. If you want to be part of the conversation today, call us at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. That's 5437. Or you can email us at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Jorge Partida. He is a psychologist and author of the book The Promise of the Fifth Son, Ancestral Journey of Self-Discovery. As a psychologist, he's worked in the areas of education, health, social services, leadership, economic development, and employment. He also focuses on the influence of culture, spirituality, and the study of healing and wellness. He's worked extensively with Latino and African American youth and families who are challenged by poor health, addiction, gang violence, and incarceration. Dr. Jorge served as director of the doctorate program in clinical psychology at John F. Kennedy University and deputy director of behavioral health for the San Francisco Department of Public Health. For more than 8 years, he was a weekly presenter for the Univision Television Network in Chicago and San Francisco, and he served as associate producer for Nuestra Familia, a PBS documentary exploring the nature of Latino gangs and organized crime. Dr. Jorge Partida, welcome to Childhood Matters.
Good morning, Nurse Verona. It's great to be here with you.
Good to see you again. Yeah. You know, I'd like to know a little bit about you first. You were born in Guadalajara, Mexico.
Yes.
At the age of 9 and immigrated to Chicago. So maybe you could tell us what it was like for you during the early years of coming to the United States, and maybe something also about coming to California.
Absolutely. I'd like to say that, you know, my shock in the immigration process actually happened before I even left Guadalajara. I had a very different childhood, as you know, in Guadalajara. My family was all together, and but one morning, about 3:30 in the morning, I woke up to noises in the house, and my mom, dad, and my two youngest brothers—one who was 2 months old and one just a little bit over a year old—they were leaving for the U.S. and they were leaving the older kids behind, and so four of us were left there, and I'm the oldest, so we all were separated and were sent to different relatives to be taken care of. And it was a shock that not only was I losing my mom and dad for a while, but I was losing my other brothers in connection to any family. So I went to live with a sister of my mom and just got into a lot of trouble. And then about 2 years later, my parents came and sent for me. And so I took that journey across the border in a car and being smuggled across the border. And just, you know, having some terrifying dreams about being killed, because there are all these stories about immigration and how raids and what would happen. And so crossing the border undocumented I knew it was risking my life. When I got here to the U.S., I was living in a suburb of Chicago, and I was really the only Mexican kid. And so that introduction that you just offered was very powerful, because it just brought back a lot of memories for me. I was a kid that was excelling in school in Mexico, but I came to this country, and all of a sudden I couldn't speak the language. I looked very different. And was getting spat on and bullied a great deal for that difference. And I didn't realize how much it mattered that you were culturally and racially different than other kids. But that those first years of acculturation here in the country was very, very tough for me. I remember finally deciding that when I was at the point of being expelled from school, and administrators went to talk to my mom, and they labeled me mildly mentally retarded.
Mm.
So I was about to embark on this entirely different road down my life. And finally, my mom said, you know, this is crying. She said, you know, this is a shame. You're the oldest. You're supposed to be an example. And instead of that, you're being an embarrassment. So I decided at that point that I was going to turn my life around. And I was, you know, at third grade. And started to just record the Brady Bunch. I remember recording Greg's voice and trying to sound just like him, so people couldn't tell that I had an accent. So those were some of my challenges, just trying to fit in and
coping skills and also my heart. I just feel so much about that idea that because you didn't speak the language, you were seen as not smart. So you had both, you know, the whole thing about you don't fit in, and then you're seen as not smart, and then you have to be tough in order to be okay.
Exactly.
And then you make some decision in your life.
And, you know, and I think that the teachers also didn't know what to do or how to teach. And I remember, you know, Mrs. Taylor, my third grade teacher, the way that she coped with my being different was she put headphones on me, very much like these, and then set me in the back of the room with a film strip. So I would have a cassette, and then the film strip would tell me when to turn the film. And so in the meantime, she taught her class. So it really made me feel very separated from everybody else.
You know, and I really can get a feel now for why you do some of the work you do.
Thank you.
I mean, you understand a lot about...
I've lived it, yeah. And I know that a lot of our children are really going through some tough times trying to really make it a go.
And it seems like you've also come to the place now in current time where you can really celebrate your heritage and
yes.
who you are and where you're from.
And, you know, and I know from clinical research and from watching children and working with children that being rooted in your culture and your sense of ancestral rootedness, that really provides children a solid base for success. It's not something that is just superfluous. It is it's elementary to the success and identity of a child.
Well, thank you for that beginning, and I know there's a lot more to say here, so let me introduce our other wonderful guest here this morning. Also joining us is Sade Sifu. She is co-founder of Afro-Urbanites, an organization redefining what it means to be Afrocentric in the 21st century. She was born and raised in Ethiopia. Before moving to the U.S. 6 years ago, she lived in the Middle East for 2 years, with the majority of her time spent in the United Arab Emirates. During her time in the Bay Area, she's worked with a nonprofit on community oral health projects, providing dental services to the underserved populations. And she is also a cultural diversity curiosity and art enthusiast. She is a happily married pre-nursing student with a lovely 5.5-year-old daughter who's here with us in studio, Ileana. So, Sidhe Sefu, welcome to Childhood Matters.
Thanks for having me, Nasrana.
I'm really glad to meet you and your daughter. Maybe you could tell us a bit about Afro-urbanites and also how you help your daughter stay connected to your culture.
Okay. So Afro-urbanites is a company that me and my friend founded together because we saw the need for a platform for, you know, people in the diaspora. I mean, there's like a lot of us in the third space. We're not in our birthplace, but also we're not necessarily integrated in the place that we live in. So culturally and even geographically, we found the need to have a platform for all of us to get connected and show our culture. So we do that by organizing events in the Bay Area.
And you have a website where people can come, and it's sort of like a way to connect people who may not even live near each other.
Exactly, yes. So we organize events, and we maintain a blog called the New African Blog. It's presenting or spotlighting what Africans in that diaspora do, you know, professionally in art and music, and also we do prepare modern Ethiopian cuisine, which is a pop-up kitchen, which goes through different cafes, and we use social media mainly to do marketing. So
I love Ethiopian food. It's wonderful.
Great.
That's great.
Thanks.
And for you, you know, your daughter was born here in the United States.
Right.
Is it part of the reason you're doing this, too, is so that she can stay connected to people from your culture?
Right. One of it is the bigger picture is that. And when we see people, you know, having children here, you know, just like the story that you told, you know, at the beginning, they look like they're from somewhere, but, you know, they can't speak the language or they don't know anything about the customs or except for from looking like that, they don't necessarily belong to that culture. So I see the need for children and also people in our age to get connected to their culture because you don't necessarily have to be in one, don't have to have only one thing in the place that you live in. So you need to be connected to your ancestral, you know, lineage or culture.
So you're in both worlds in that way.
Right.
You're connected. You have the food and the understanding and the common history and traditions.
Yes.
And then you're also learning as a, I don't know how old you are, but I'm saying a 30-something-year-old, maybe a 20.
I'm 30.
Okay, 30. Right, a 30-something-year-old, learning how to move in this world that is very modern and current here.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you very much. So we're talking about that experience, and it's so varied depending on who you are, where you're from, how your children are doing, and what's important to you. We'll open up the phone lines, 1-877-372-KIDS. We'd like to hear from you if you came here from another culture, if you have children who you have helped immigrate, you know, who have immigrated here, whatever you'd like to share with us this morning around cultural diversity. We have starting off with us Maria from San Francisco. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Ruana.
Oh, nice to hear from you this morning, Maria.
Yes, I'm so happy to be on and participate in the program.
So you have a child. How old is he?
He's going to be 5 years old in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. And Maria, where's your home of origin? Where are you from?
I am from Venezuela. And I've been living here in the Bay Area for about 7 years now. So I moved here when I was 30. I'm 37 now. Have my family here and expecting my second child in February. So I wanted to share a little bit about my experience, Rona. And I initially heard what Jorge was saying, and I know that still there's things happening with many Spanish-speaking immigrants here in the U.S. and here in the Bay Area. my experience has been really different. I moved here being a professional already. My partner was living here for a long time. Then when we decided to have our son, one of the priorities has been always to teach him and to share all the cultural values that we have in the Latino community. So we do that through different ways. And first one is that we speak Spanish at home all the time. But I think that when he was like almost 3 years old and he started preschool, he went to preschool and he didn't speak any English. We were so blessed that we found a bilingual preschool where he started to pick up the English, and in 2 months he was speaking the two languages.
Kids are amazing that way.
In 2 months, yes, and he seems to be, you know, really happy, and that was a really small and community-oriented program, so he felt he was valued, and we have been working really hard on that side, so the language is probably the main piece that we speak Spanish all the time, unless we have friends who don't speak Spanish around us. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But then we do other things. He's like all the time listening to the music from Venezuela and Mexico and other. My husband is Mexican American, and we have music from other countries playing in the house at all times.
Yes.
Since he wakes up every morning, and then we cook and we cook our recipes. We share that. And he's in contact with my family, with my husband's family, talking on the phone with his cousins all the time. And I think that that's so important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And you know, it's great that we have advances today where, you know, you can pick up a laptop, or you can tweet somebody in Mexico, or you can have these type of connections, I think, that really make it much more fluid. And I think that it's absolutely true that, you know, children who are very young and they're exposed to different languages early on really do pick them up. Obviously, the younger you are, the easier it is to pick up these languages. It's also very important to have that language be rooted in family, so that there is language is also an emotion. So we know that the first language that a child has is going to be affiliated with family, and it's going to be affiliated with that environment. And so, as in this case, with Maria, you know, she clearly has made that a value for her family, and it becomes a celebration. It really gives children the sense of pride and the sense of courage to be able to move forward into the world and explore it in a much more powerful manner.
And I would imagine today for Ileana, it's a little different, because in the schools, you know, there's a lot of people teaching Spanish, and
right.
children learn Spanish. There's not necessarily people teaching the Ethiopian language,
right.
which is...
Amharic is the national Amharic. Language, but there are many languages. That's what we speak. The main way that we made her keep it is because we speak in Amharic as well, you know, as Maria was saying in the house. And looking at, you know, photos of people who are in Ethiopia. So when she went back in January, it was like, it's as if that she's known them for a long time. So it was easy to get along with everyone. And, you know, the music, the dance and everything, my immediate family lives in the Bay Area. So that makes it easy for her, you know, to interact with them and keep, so language is very, very important.
Very important. And we also have things like Skype these days. Mm-hmm. Maria, I have a book that I just love. It's called Whoever You Are by Mem Fox. This is a book that I found by accident right after 9/11, actually. I found it and I loved it so much because it shows pictures of children throughout the world, beautifully illustrated. I cried when I first read it about whoever you are, wherever you are throughout the world. And actually, Kaiser at that time bought about 5,000 copies and gave them out to all the parents. We got some copies and I want to send you one for calling in this morning.
Thank you, Gloria.
1-877-372-KIDS. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you want to say something about your own acculturation here or how you've helped your children. And Jorge, before I take the next call, we sometimes see, especially teens who mm-hmm. come here, whether it's challenges based on language or acceptance, who then wind up in some way wanting to reject their parents' culture and sometimes winding up also being very tempted to be part of a gang for sort of another kind of culture.
Right.
Do you want to say something about the work you've done with teens?
Yes. I do a lot of work with teens who are really going through this identity process. I mean, chronologically and just developmentally, we know that children are going to have this need to pull away from their parents. It is it's a normal sort of exploration. But when oftentimes when parents from a different culture come here, they become very marginalized and separated. So there is a sense of wanting to sort of dig your heels in and become much more conservative as a means of trying to preserve the family unit. We see this especially fathers with young daughters who want to keep them sort of from dating or want to keep them from having too many relationships outside of the home because they're concerned of the influence that is going to be impacted on these children externally. The children themselves have a desire to explore and be mainstreamed. They want to be able to feel that they're not different. They're part of the majority culture. Unfortunately, there's no real guidance. There's no real bridge between the culture of origin and the family of origin and then this sort of allure that tries to pull you in and tries to promise that, you know, if you do these things that you're going to be accepted into the mainstream. Oftentimes what happens then is that children then feel they're very vulnerable to those peer forces that try to tell them that, you know, you got to be cool, you got to do this, you got to do that. And pretty soon we find that kids are doing things that they don't necessarily believe in, but because they don't have the moral compass, they don't have the sort of mentorship and role models to follow, they can very easily fall into some traps like drug addiction, gang violence, teen pregnancies, and other challenges that are difficult to overcome. What also happens is that at the same time, that the family structure is oftentimes, if it's not connected to a culture, then it also begins to deteriorate because oftentimes women are earning more than the male counterpart, and so there's family stressors, I think, that are very critical. So it is important for children to navigate and to have a solid role model, and oftentimes if the family is adjusting well, then they're able to really pull the children in further.
That's a really concise kind of explanation of a very complex issue. Sade, I would think that I keep thinking about early, you know, the younger the child who's here and the more a parent like yourself is working to navigate those worlds, the easier it is.
Right. My experience with that is when my daughter first started preschool, she was pretty much like the only colored person in the school that she had questions like, why am I different? You know, why is my hair different? Why am I taking, you know, a different kind of food? You know, why am I not having a PJ, you know, sandwich and
peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Exactly.
So, PB&J.
PB&J.
That's how you say it. PB&J. There you go. Acculturation right here.
Exactly. So by explaining to her that, you know, you have this color because you come from a different, you know, country, and this is where you come from. You know, you look like us, and, you know, your hair is like this because, you know, again, this is where you come from. And we have our own, you know, food, so that's why you have this food. So by telling her where she is who she is because of where she comes from, give her the, you know, the confidence and the identity, and also, you know, going to different events that you know, that Ethiopians or Africans in the diaspora basically get together to have a cultural event, also exposes her, she's not different.
That's right. And also when the schools and community embrace the beauty of difference, then the way you talk to your child about that will make all the difference in
Absolutely.
The world. And the earlier, the better. Let's take more calls. Thank you. We have Laura with us now from Hercules joining us. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Nersheta. How are you?
Good. So good to hear from you this morning. So actually, Laura Lee, you're the author of Little Laura and the Birthday Surprise, right?
That's right. Inspired by children.
Inspired by children. I know you're going to join us in a few weeks on a show that we're going to do about music.
Right.
But maybe on this subject of acculturation, is there something you'd like to ask or add?
Yeah, You know, I was just tagging along the previous caller, and I think it's just amazing how, you know, we have the support nowadays in the schools or just in the community for being bilingual or even trilingual, and that she was able to find a program for her son and that he's thriving in both languages. You know, children are like sponges. They really just pick up everything, and, you know, learning a second language is no-brainer. You know, they don't have to go through from one language to reach the other language, like adults might have to.
Yes.
And being a mother of two children, I am raising my three-year-old, just turned three-year-old daughter, and she's completely bilingual, and newborn baby son, which I hope will also be bilingual. But, you know, one of my fears was when I was sending her to preschool that she would suddenly stop, you know, speaking Mandarin. But what I've found is that, you know, we've developed such a strong relationship, in Mandarin Chinese that I only speak Mandarin Chinese with her in and outside of the household. My husband, who doesn't speak any Chinese, he speaks just English with her.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just been awesome. So she's really comfortable in both settings of native speakers. And it's just, I hope that, you know, they also, my children with each other will hopefully speak, you know, mostly in Mandarin. So I'm trying to preserve that. Just wondering, you know, what one of my fears was in sending her to an English preschool and hoping that, you know, she won't lose that. So,
well, the fact that you speak Mandarin at home is, is the key. And I think, you know, for someone like Jorge, when he came here, you know, he didn't have English.
Right.
You didn't have, and you had, you didn't have people at school speaking kind English to you.
Exactly. And I think that the cultural values really change. I mean, I think, you know, when I was a kid and I was going through school, we were living under the myth of America, the melting pot. There was an emphasis for children to blend in, and parents were actually teaching children to be
not
ashamed
right.
of their cultural background and to not speak the language of origin. It was something that was really impressed on us because we wanted to assimilate. We wanted to be part of the majority culture. These ideas of children integrating in dual language schools, for example, is a very, very novel idea. And it's not always accepted. Although we have all the evidence and all the research that suggests that children learn greatly when they are in dual language programs, not everybody's welcoming of that. But I think that when you have parents that are well educated, they see the importance of their cultural values, they're modeling for their children how important it is to be proud of who you are, you've got a very different sort of existence in the world than the idea of let's just forget who we are and let's just all try to look the same.
That's right. A lot less trauma. You know, I mean, your daughter is blessed with having two parents who are proud of who they are, you know, and that you're actually really keeping that without it being a barrier also.
Right.
You're not saying that's, you know, that's all, I'll only hang out with people of the same culture, right?
Yes. We're basically, we have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Friends all over.
Yeah.
Laura, I'd like to send you a copy of Mem Fox's book, Whoever You Are. I think you'll really like it. And I appreciate what you said this morning, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye bye, Laura.
All right. Bye bye.
And now we have another call. We have a call from Dr. Norma Francisco from Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying your show. And the Dr. Jorge, I didn't get his last name, said something that struck a chord regarding the importance of cultural background or cultural environment. And I wanted to ask about the impact of taking ethnic studies out of the curriculum, particularly the way that it has been done in Arizona, where they've outlawed the teaching of ethnic studies. So I was wondering if your guest could speak to that.
Good. And it's Jorge Partida, P-A-R-T-I-D-A.
Thank you.
Jorge?
Yes. There's a couple of programs, I think, that have been really critical. When you remove ethnic studies or studies that really have children identify with their cultural background, you get sent a very strong message to the child about what their identity means to the larger society. We've seen that Chicano studies studies have been pulled out of schools. They've been pulled out of universities. And in high school and junior high, we hear constant feedback from kids that are saying that what they are learning in school is not relevant to their lives. We have research that shows that children of color learn differently. They process information differently than Anglo children. Yet we don't apply this research. And when we do have that research and we see that it is important for children to learn about their own background and to learn about their own history, we remove these classes from the curriculum. That really sends a very damaging message, not just to the children who are different, but it sends a message to the entire society that we want you to just fit in. It's also important to recognize the reason why I have issues with bilingual education. The idea of having a child be in a program that ESL or other programs within the schools that pulls children away from the mainstream and marginalizes them, in most cases sets these children behind because it gives them a different curriculum than the majority culture. It's important to recognize that our children are intelligent. They're able to process languages, and they also need to be kept up with the general studies. That's why dual language programs work much better than these marginalized programs that we put our kids in. But I agree with the caller. I think it's so important to emphasize to our administrators that children need to be rooted in their identity, and they need those classes to show them pride in who they are.
Norma Francisco, do you work with children in an educational setting?
Yes, I do. I ran a Kumon Math and Reading Center for 10 years, and then I'm currently an academic advisor in a college that does prepare teachers. And I know now that all teachers in California have to be certified in CLAD, which is a language a program, so that they're able to communicate with students who do not speak the native language. And it was my understanding that they're not doing as many pull-out activities as they did before, because they do recognize that that is damaging. So I was wondering if you're aware of whether teachers being taught how to work with students who speak a second language has made a difference. And then after you respond to that, I want to say something more about
We have other calls coming. So that subject, I think we should do a show about. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could leave your name with our producer, and maybe we could find someone who's an expert in that. So go ahead with your final thought or question.
Okay. I just want to say I heard a pioneer educator yesterday who said that our children need to be taught who they are, and that's the reason that so many children nowadays are off on the wrong track.
Right.
So I agree that our children do need to hear about their culture.
Absolutely. And, you know, people like Sade and, you know, the organization that you started is saying, you know, let's make space for it, right?
Yes, yes. Resolving this identity issue earlier, and, you know, in children's at children's stage is much better to, when they become adults, they would have a strong sense of who they are and where they come from, which make them, you know, a better person, I would say.
Well, and also with no shame and no blame and, you know, full acceptance. Since you work with children, would you like a copy of Mem Fox's books, Whoever You Are?
Yes, I would love
It's a beautiful book, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you so much for your call, Norma.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Childhood Matters. Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Hello, my name is Oswaldo, and I'm a longtime listener of Childhood Matters radio program. I'm a father of three, soon to be a grandfather, and I have been listening to Childhood Matters for 8 years. I can call in with my comments or questions, and has been a great resource for me. Throughout the years, Childhood Matters has helped me realize how important it is to interact and listen to your child. and my son Skyler has benefited tremendously from the show, and now they need our help. With our support, Childhood Matters can stay on the air and continue helping families. Go to childhoodmatters.org or call 877-372-KIDS to make a donation or find out how you can help.
Thank you so much, Oswaldo. Oswaldo is one of our longtime listeners. Last time he called in, he called from Brazil. So there you go. Thank you, Oswaldo. Let's take another call. We have Dora with us from San Jose. Good morning, Dora.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. You have two children, sort of preteens.
Yes, 1 11, 1 14.
Aha.
Yeah, since I decided to be pregnant and I have kids, I decided to teach in my that language I have. We speak Spanish at home, and I teach in English at both. I decided to read, and I read in both languages. Also, what we did at home was we teach them that our values, that we're Mexican, we're from Mexico City, but we celebrate things that they don't celebrate in the United States, and same as their culture, because they're Americans also. We celebrate what they everybody celebrates in America. However, we celebrate, like, for instance, we celebrate Halloween, but we also celebrate the Day of the Dead, because it's also something important for our culture.
Yes. Yes. Very important what you're bringing up is celebrations. You know, right. Not everyone is going to celebrate Thanksgiving, right? How do you deal with that, Sade?
Oh, Thanksgiving?
No.
Oh, generally?
Generally what she's bringing up about celebrations.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have one event to go to, for instance, today. It's at a church, but it's like burning... okay, so it's a long story. But
long story, and it's part of your culture, Ethiopian?
Right. It's also, it comes from an Orthodox Christian background, so it has religious history towards
it. Does it have a name, the celebration?
Mezcal. Yes.
Uh-huh. And
yes.
Will your daughter also celebrate Halloween?
Yes. I mean, we celebrate everything.
I think that's a wonderful way to be celebrating everything. What about you, Jorge?
I do think that it's important to hold on to the family traditions, because they can quickly disappear. When I came here to this country, we had a very unique way of celebrating Christmas, which is the old posadas and, you know, the prize on the shoes, the candy on the shoes and all that. And then in 1 year, things changed very quickly. It is important to, regardless of what you celebrate, to make sure that these are celebrations that are consistent, that they become cultural customs for your family, and that that's what happens with children is that that provides a sense of anchoring. It provides a sense of identity. So if you have more celebrations to celebrate different aspects of different cultures, even better. But there really needs to be traditions within the family that are preserved and that are really sacred to the family traditions, to the family continuity.
Dora, do you feel like you have those with your children?
Yes. We do celebrate Christmas different. Yeah. And we celebrate things that America doesn't celebrate. I think it is important for them to understand our culture and to know where they're coming from.
Yes. And you find as they're getting older, they're still interested in what you are providing for them?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, because when 1 year I tried not to do that three white skins, which is January 6th, when they get, that we do in Mexico. And they're like, what happened? We're Mexican.
right. And that makes you happy. And then I would imagine you also cook with them and pass on your traditions through food as well, don't you?
I only cook Mexican food. I don't know how to cook American food.
Good. Well, keep it that way. And I'm sure that they will have the best of both worlds as well. Have you taken them to the Exploratorium in San Francisco?
Yes, we went once, and it was really wonderful experience.
Would you like tickets for maybe, these tickets are good through December. Maybe you can go during their Christmas break again. We'll send you some tickets, if you celebrate Christmas, that is, but during their holiday.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we did celebrate the 24th.
Uh-huh. Okay, we'll send you some more. Thanks, Dora. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Let's take another call now. We have Dee from Salinas. Good morning, Dee.
Good morning. I just was listening to your program, and I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm 57 years old, but I was an illegitimate child, and my father was Mexican, and my mother denied me of my culture. And just of late, I've been going to the Aguilar here in Salinas because that's the closest I will ever feel or know my dad to learn who I am. And I've been talking to people out here because we have a lot of gangs, a lot of killings, a lot of things going on here in Salinas. And I really believe that if they had more of the cultures, you know, if people could know who they are, their core values, that they wouldn't wind up in places. I've been clean and sober for 18 years.
Oh, congratulations to you.
And out of prison. So you know what?
Yeah.
I would hate to see any of these kids go through what, you know, a lot of us have gone through because of the denial of who we are.
And you have grandchildren and children, it looks like. You've come a long way. The fact that you're calling in this morning to tell people that is so valuable. I just want to say that first, Dee, that, you know, a lot of people have their journeys that are rough and, you know, and hit bottom and go through real struggles. And I think you also represent the fact that we can always make change, that it's never too late. Jorge, what she's saying, I know Salinas has some really terrible problems
yes.
with gangs.
Salinas, you know, is the focus of the film Nuestra Familia. That's where we went to do the documentary. And it is a documentary that focuses precisely on what Dee is talking about, is the impact of the bicultural lack of integration for children. It is important to recognize that, you know, when you are in a place like Salinas and there is a large migrant community that is sort of the backbone, and we have children that are children of migrant workers, plus you also have surrounding you, you know, very wealthy areas where children get very confused about what the identity is. And if we don't have the social services, if we don't have the family background, if we don't have sort of the ideas of anchoring children to their culture, to their values, we do hear what happens from Dee's perspective. It is that the deterioration and the violence and the sort of exploration that begins to happen really does create a great deal of damage for children.
Thank you for that. And Dee, thank you so much. And I'm glad that you can now help others realize the need to stay connected to their past, to their heritage. Looks like you have grandchildren, so we'll send you some of our children's books. Thank you so much for calling in, and I hope to hear from you again.
Well, thank you for having your program. And thank you also, Doctor, for being there and having the documentaries that you had, because this is very valuable for all of us. I was born and raised here, and like I said, there's a lot of people in prison that they need to know that their children are going to be okay, and this town needs to turn around.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, and you're one of the people, you know, one person can make a difference, and keep doing what you do. Thank you so much, Dee. Let's take a listen now to what some parents had to say at Lotus Bloom.
I'm associate producer Lorenzo Plazola, and I'm interviewing some parents here at Lotus Bloom in Oakland about acculturation and adaptation. What was the biggest challenge when you first came to this country?
The cultural difference. I came from third world country, and being in the first world country is totally different experience. To know the culture and the society, the way they live, was the biggest challenge to me.
I really don't feel any challenge much, but it's more comfortable. Everybody seems equal, and I have welcomed and joined all the community.
Well, I was born in this country, but my parents both immigrated, and I guess some of the challenges were finding a community where we felt welcome at times and understood.
And did you feel welcome when you came to this country?
Yes, it was a very welcome situation. I do speak English at the time when I came here, so there wasn't a language barrier.
He fought in a war, like, in the Philippines, and so he was on the United States side, so they, like, granted them and their, like, family, like, you know, all the ones that helped in the war. So they were very welcome.
Sometimes it was hard for them to reach out and find resources and find places for their kids to go.
How do you teach your kids about their roots?
It's to try to value the different celebrations that we celebrate during the year. For example, the big celebration, it's El Día de los Muertos, Day of Death. I try to get involved with my daughters so they understand that that celebration is part of our culture.
Spend time with the family and just be with them, and just kind of that's what it is being together.
Most of time we gather with the families, we go to church. Most of people in the church is from back home, so they do study the language and they study about their cultures through video means and, you know, personal connections.
And why do you think it's important for kids to be connected to their roots?
Because it's who they are, it's where they come from.
Oh, I think it provides them with a history of their ancestors, and I think it's good for them to know that they belong.
I feel like we get more secure to the art kids, and also when they grow, they know that they have a very rich culture. To know who they are, I think it's very important. It's like, it's not, they're born here in California, but they're not, because they're born here are 100% American, yeah. But they're also Latin American. So I think it's both cultures together make them stronger.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
I was getting off on that music there. That's good. Thank you, Lorenzo. And it looks like we had a caller, Isaac Sina, who called to say hello to Sade, okay, and to say congratulations.
Great.
So what you just heard from the parents, Sade, anything that stood out for you?
Yes. One of them is finding like programs or places to go, you know, is very important, and getting like information is a challenge for most immigrant families. It's, you know, like they don't know where to go or how to navigate the system. So it's really, really important to find and having, you know, an organization like Lotus Bloom. Did I say it right?
Yes,
Lotus Bloom, right?
It is. We always want to say Blossom.
Blossom, right.
Right, it's Bloom.
Lotus Bloom, which is really good for immigrant families and to come and have those kind of information readily available for them. So,
and I do want to say that every county has First Five, and you can go to your First Five agency in your county and ask them what's available. You can call 211. But I ran into a woman the other day, a lovely woman from Russia, from the Ukraine, and she said she hadn't found the Russian community yet.
Right.
And trying to find those resources to connect. And one suggestion that one of the doctors said who came on my show, who was Russian, I talked to her afterwards. She said, go to the Russian bakery. Go to the place where there's food.
Right, exactly.
And those people will tell you how to be connected.
Yes.
What stood out for you, Jorge?
Well, I want to say hello to my niece, Amanda Dominguez, who's listening to us in Chicago. It's technology is wonderful. But what stood out for me is the way in which people come really makes a big difference. The level of education that you have, it matters how much sort of exposure you have to education, to services, and families that come more prepared and that have more resources obviously do better. They have children that do better. It's tough when you are an immigrant and you are poor and afraid of assimilating, because that fear also gets transferred to your children. And there's a lot of immigrants that come here and that marginalize because they're so afraid of either deportations or they're afraid of what might happen to them if they do assimilate. And that also colors experiences of children. It's important for us to recognize that assimilation can be a celebration. Acculturation should really be a celebration, but it needs to be modeled adequately by parents. Parents also have the responsibility of getting out there in society and trying to really make it a go. This is a mutual learning process, and children will model from you what is the best reaction to have.
You know, it's so important what you just said. I was at a training on Friday from the Inspire Family Learning Centers in San Jose, and they brought in people to the child care providers. They did a training for child care providers, and they brought in people from the community who have resources, health insurance, housing, asthma, all kinds of things. And each person would say, and by the way, you need to know that your legal status is not going to determine whether you get services or not. And the child care providers needed to pass that on on to the parents to reduce that fear.
It's yes, because that fear is real and it does happen out there. There are families that do get deported, and so it's not an unrealistic fear, but you're right.
That's right. Yeah. And so, Jorge Partida, as we wrap up, how can people find out about some of the work you're doing? You have a website.
I do have a website. It's drjorge.net, very easy. And I also recommend the second book that I just wrote, which is called A Week of Awakening. It's integrating ancestral healing with traditional psychology, both of my books.
Well, we have another show to do on that for sure. And it's J-O-R-G-E. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nurse.
And
my pleasure.
And today, your website, so people who are part of the African diaspora can come and find out.
Yes. And we have a mailing list as well, so they can sign up. And the website is afrourbanites.com. And you can get in touch with us through email, afrourbanites@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Google Plus, we're everywhere. So,
well, thank you for joining us and bringing your lovely daughter and for thank all the you. Work that you're doing. I hope we connect again and we get to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you know, we're just touching the surface here, but it's important for all of us to be thinking about how we move in the world and how we reach out to other people.
Absolutely.
You know, how we are embracing the people who we meet and how we're accepting the people we meet. So thank you very, very much. Thank you to our staff this morning. We have Felsha Zuschlag, our producer, and Lorenzo Plazzola, our assistant producer at the controls. My gratitude to my kids, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. You are awesome. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week. And remember, spend time with your child and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Get everybody and sing.
Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.